Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with an analysis of the Oklahoma City bombing and events in and around and connected to that. One of the lines of discussion that has been presented primarily by elements within the Patriots and Militia networks is the allegation that the Oklahoma City bombing was a government operation, in effect a provocation intended to ensure, among other things, the passage of the anti-terrorism bill, which was in front of Congress at that time, and also to discredit the Patriots and Militia networks. As I have indicated in numerous archive shows available from Spitfire, the utilization of provocations, a type of terrorist incident, which is a psyop, a psychological operation intended to shift blame and focus for the terrorist incident to one's opponent in order to not only discredit that opponent but to justify action against that. That type of psyop, a provocation, is certainly something that is not alien to our intelligence system. They've done it numerous times in the past. There are indications, for example, that the Pope shooting, which I've done a great deal of work on, was a psyop by elements of Western intelligence, including fascist elements within the American, Italian, and German intelligence services. The essence of a psyop is that it is, the essence of a provocation, I should say, is that it is a psyop. It's a psychological operation, not that it necessarily involves things purely psychological. Indeed, a psychological operation frequently involves the loss of life, often a great deal of life. But the essence of the operation is that it is targeted at the psyche of a given population. It is intended to, again, discredit one's opponent and to often serve as a pretext for a predetermined action. One of the things that I think needs to be carefully considered in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, and that is the unusual nature of the media coverage. And if the Oklahoma City bombing had been a provocation, I think the nature of the media coverage would have been very different than what we have been seeing. Because after the initial media flurry saying that this was the Patriots and Militia networks and so on and so forth, we have later been told that it was two lone nuts, basically. It was Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh. And I simply, from a practical standpoint, do not think that those two individuals would have had the logistical capability to pull this incident off on their own. And there are also numerous elements of conflicting data indicating that there was a much larger element involved. I would note, however, that despite the fact that there has been some media coverage pointing to a wider international fascist conspiracy, the media coverage in the United States has worked almost feverishly to downplay that connection. We're going to discuss some of the media coverage of Oklahoma City, in particular a couple of relatively suppressed details, and the suppression of the international Nazi and fascist connections to Oklahoma City, or some of the apparent Nazi and fascist connections to Oklahoma City, I think, is something that needs to be carefully considered. I do believe that there were elements within the government that were complicit with this operation. However, I do not think that this was a provocation. Rather, I think that those elements are part of literally a fascist fifth column in the United States. Not that fascism is something alien to America. I've discussed the history of American fascism in numerous archive shows available from Spitfire. But in my opinion, the elements that were involved with Oklahoma City involved fascist elements both within the government and fascist elements within the militia and patriots networks operating in conjunction with an international element which also, likewise, involved elements inside of and outside of foreign governments. I think the paradigm for what is going on in the United States was the subversion of France prior to World War II by a domestic fifth column composed of French fascists that was allied not really with patriotic Frenchmen, but rather with German and Italian intelligence. I discussed that fifth column in the first installment, the September 4th, 1994 installment of a miscellaneous archive series entitled Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, and that's available from Spitfire. Again, I think that the Oklahoma City event has been oversimplified by analysts on all sides of the question. With regard to the charge frequently surfaced by the Patriots and Militia networks, again, a milieu that I think is far more complex than has generally been represented. I think many of the people within those networks are sincere patriots and conservatives. I also think many of them are outright raving Nazis and fascists. It is generally That network has been oversimplified by analysts on both sides. But with regard to the charge that they have made that this is a provocation, this was a government operation intended to discredit their networks and to work for the passage of the counterterrorism bill, the nature of the media coverage surrounding Oklahoma City has not been what one would expect from a provocation. If this had been a government operation, we would have seen the Wurlitzer, basically the intelligence community's component within the media, blasting the notion all over, no pun intended, that this was an international fascist conspiracy, and you've been hearing about this on the 6 o'clock news. You'd have been reading about it on the front page of every paper. Articles would have been planted both by CIA and the closely allied U.S. Information Agency, not only in our media, but numerous foreign media. And we have not been seeing that type of operation. So the media coverage, again, the media coverage surrounding Oklahoma City is not what one would expect with regard to a provocation. Just take a look, for example, at the media coverage surrounding the shooting of the Pope. The, quote, Bulgarian thesis, unquote, has now been completely discredited, and yet we saw that bandied about on the evening news, you read about it on the front page of every paper for months and months and months at a time. That is the type of media component that goes with a provocation. And again, if this had been a provocation or the type of operation that the Patriots and militia networks had been charging it is, we would have been seeing a type of media coverage that's very different from what we have been seeing. Indeed, the cover-up of connections like the Andrea Strassmeyer connection, and in a half-hour update to the analysis of the Oklahoma City bombing, I read an Oklahoma State Patrol bulletin put out for Andrea Strassmeyer in the immediate aftermath of Oklahoma City. But we're seeing that and other international fascist connections to Oklahoma City being covered up. I suspect that that is because if the Oklahoma City bombing were to be investigated, it would lay bare not only an international fascist network, but it would lay bare much of the real history of the 20th century, which would reveal that not only was fascism not an aberration, but that powerful elements within the United States, Great Britain, and elsewhere actively supported not only fascism in Germany, but fascism in Italy. And it would also reveal that that fascism did not disappear. It went underground. The institutions in Germany were never effectively denazified. And now, with Germany reunified and the Cold War over, those fascist and Nazi elements are reemerging into public view. I would also note that those same Nazi elements, what I have referred to as the Underground Reich, were, even as they were working with our U.S. intelligence system under the auspices of the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, they also were working with the Soviets. In fact, they were not really working for us or for the Soviets. They were working with their own agenda, and they were pitting both sides off against the middle. They were working both sides of the street, as it is discussed in intelligence terms. Again, I want to note that the complex Oklahoma City event, an event that has been oversimplified, in my opinion, by analysts on all sides of the question, this event is, I think, in many ways most clearly revealed by the media coverage surrounding it. And again, the media coverage is not what would be expected of a provocation. We're not being told that international terrorist networks were behind this and we need to close our borders and check everybody for hemorrhoids in order to detect this international terrorist network. Instead, we're seeing a cover-up of the some of these apparent international connections, and the media are not responding in the way they would for a classic provocation. Consider the following. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who has been doing his characteristically excellent and selfless research and sharing that with us for many, many years. I want to note that Dave has done a great job in analyzing the foreign media. He does this without pay, as do I. I don't get paid for doing this program. He is a genuine soldier for the cause of righteousness, a very heroic and unselfish individual, and once again, a major tip of the hat to Dave. Dave White, that is. Dave researched and translated the following for us from La Nación. That's an Argentinian newspaper. And this is from La Nación's issue of Sunday, July 27th of 1997. And this concerns apparent connecting links between the milieu surrounding the Oklahoma City bombing and the milieu surrounding the AMIA bombing in 1994. That was a Jewish documentation center with information about fugitive Nazi elements in Argentina. It was destroyed in a huge bomb, and one of the names that has surfaced in connection with that was Manzar al-Qassar, the Syrian terrorist and drug dealer, who was the major figure not only for securing East Bloc arms for the Contras, but he also was the major figure utilized by the Reagan and Bush administrations for securing the American arms for the Iranians. He also was credited by the DEA with bringing 20% of the heroin into the United States, also a central figure in not only the Achille Lauro hijacking, but also with in all likelihood, the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. Again, that individual was put on the White House payroll under the Reagan administration. He was the central figure in the Iran-Contra affair, as well as, the central figure in the Iran-Contra affair, and his name has surfaced in connection with the AMIA bombing. Those plotters now appear to have been connected with elements within the Argentinian federal police, and I also want to note that there is an apparent connection between those elements and the milieu surrounding the Oklahoma City bombing. I'm not saying the Oklahoma City bombing per se, although that may be the case, but again, there are some evidentiary tributaries running between the milieu of the AMIA bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing, and we have not been told about these in our media, and it is the absence of that type of coverage that leads me to suspect this is not a provocation. Again, a provocation is a type of psyop, a psychological operation, and the media coverage surrounding Oklahoma City is not what we would expect of a provocation, that type of psyop. Not that our government has not engaged in those in the past. Veteran listeners to my program know only too well that they have, but the media coverage surrounding Oklahoma City is not what would be expected of a provocation type of psyop. Again, research and translation credit for the following goes to Dave White. And again, this is from La Nación, an Argentinian daily, of Sunday, July 27th of 1997. The title, AMIA Bomb Plotters Connection. The article reads in part as follows. While investigating the Oklahoma City bombing, the FBI discovered that the Argentinian branch of Tom Metzger's White Aryan Resistance was located in the home of someone connected to the AMIA plotters. Timothy McVeigh, condemned to death for the attack on the federal building in Oklahoma City, belonged to the White Aryan Resistance. By the way, that is a strong possibility, but some have disputed that. Continuing, the FBI identified a group of 8 men connected to the AMIA bombing. 3 of the men used cellular telephones. An FBI undercover agent infiltrated the group nicknamed Los Cochitas, that's C-O-C-H-I-T-A-S, which formed part of a larger organization called POC, La División Protección al Orden Constitucional. So again, note that according to La Nación, the FBI discovered links between the AMIA bombing and Tom Metzger's White Aryan Resistance, to which some have alleged Timothy McVeigh belonged. One of the people who belongs to that organization was the aforementioned Dennis Mahone, the white supremacist leader with connections in Germany, such as Bernd Schmidt, who doubles as a German governmental agent and also a Nazi martial arts instructor. It was his martial arts school that served as sort of the operational base for German Nazis convicted in the deadly Solingen firebombing some years ago. Reprising an element that I read in the first half-hour segment, updating Oklahoma City, this from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, July 17th of 1997. This is an AP story datelined Oklahoma City, headlined, White Supremacist Takes Fifth in Oklahoma Bombing Probe. And again, this is about Dennis Mahone. Dennis Mahone of Tulsa, who operates a dial-a-racist hotline and is a member of the White Aryan Resistance, has denied involvement in the bombing. I would also note he took the fifth in connection with the grand jury investigation. And note that according to apparently to some FBI operatives who infiltrated the milieu of the AMIA bombing, there appear to be operational connections between that milieu and the milieu implicated in Oklahoma City. Not that the two events are necessarily directly connected, but there are certainly evidentiary tributaries running between the AMIA bombing and Oklahoma City, and yet note that we have not heard about those in this country. There has been, for all intents and purposes, a media blackout on this potentially vital connection. And I've not seen anything about that in the American mainstream media or in the so-called alternative media, whether the right-wing press or the so-called progressive press, and note, as always, the use of the term so-called. That article, again, from La Nación of Sunday, July 27th of 1997. And the absence of coverage of items like that in our media is one of the reasons that I do not believe that this is a classic provocation. Again, the sanitization in our media coverage of many of the Nazi and white supremacist links, not to mention some of these international connections, is again one of the reasons that I do not think that we're looking at a provocation along the usual scenario. Again, the media coverage has been anything but one would expect from a provocation. The media coverage is that we're dealing with two lone nuts. There's never been a satisfactory explanation provided for John Doe number two. And again, note the sanitization of not only the international connections, but some of the fascist and Nazi connections to this event. The following article, again, characteristic of that sanitized coverage, the following article is from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, January 21st of 1998. This is from the National News in Brief column in the Mercury or section. This article is headlined from Mercury News Wire Services, "Ohio Convict Links Brother to Tim McVeigh." One of the brothers caught on videotape in a shootout with police told a Wilmington, Ohio court Tuesday his brother was involved in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. Quote, "At this point, I do have knowledge that my brother was involved in the bombing of a federal building," unquote, Shane Keough, 21, told a judge before he was sentenced to 24 and a half years in prison for his part in the shootout. He did not elaborate in the comments about his brother, Chevy Keough, 24, or make any mention of the federal building bombing. By the way, Keough is K-E-H-O-E. The brothers escaped the police shootout and eluded a fugitive hunt for more than 4 months before Shane surrendered. Chevy Keough has since been indicted in the Arkansas killings of a gun dealer, his wife, and daughter. Last week, the FBI confirmed it was investigating a report published in Spokane, Washington, that Chevy Keough told a motel manager there he wanted to watch TV the morning of the Oklahoma City bombing because he expected something major was about to happen. The manager, who no longer works for the motel, told authorities that he believes Chevy stayed at the motel with Timothy McVeigh, the convicted Oklahoma City bomber, a few months before the bombing. He said Keough introduced a man fitting McVeigh's description as, quote, Tim, unquote, the newspaper reported. Now, again, note this particular article, potentially very important, alleging a connection between the brothers Chevy and Shane Keough and Timothy McVeigh. I cannot state whether there was such a connection, but certainly one of the brothers has alleged that himself. But note, first of all, that this story has not been exactly front-page news in the United States. Most media voices didn't even touch this story. And beyond that, in this particular article, again from the San Jose Mercury News of January 21st of 1998, the Nazi and white supremacist connections of the Keough brothers, both of whom were apparently affiliated with Aryan Nations, have been completely sanitized. One would not, from reading this particular article, one of the relatively few that appeared in the mainstream media about this connection, one would not know that there was any ideological affiliation with the Keough brothers, whereas, in fact, there was such an ideological affiliation. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience who researched this for us. This comes from the Village Voice of March 25th of 1997. This is an article by James Ridgway. It's entitled Armies of the Right, subtitled Timothy McVeigh's Revolutionary Footsteps. The article reads in part as follows. Moments after the cop ordered the Chevrolet Suburban to the side of the road that Saturday afternoon in Wilmington, Ohio, the man in the passenger seat jumped out, pulled a pistol, and opened fire on the officer. Staggering backward, the cop fumbled for his own gun and managed to get off a fusillade of shots. Unscathed, the car's passenger ran into the woods. The driver, who had been standing beside his door, knocked aside another cop, got behind the wheel, and took off down the road. Later that day, the same men tangled with the cops in another shootout. Again, they got away. The police all-points bulletin for the men pictures a sweet-looking young man with twinkling eyes, his face protected by the floppy brim of a Western hat straight out of Lonesome Dove. His name is Chevy O'Brien Keough, 24. And it looks like he made a clean getaway across the Midwest in a Dodge Executive mobile home, along with his brother Shane, 20, and their wives and kids. 2 weeks ago, the motorhome was found abandoned at an underpass on an interstate outside Casper, Wyoming. The Keoghs are wanted for questioning in the robbery and grisly murder of an Arkansas gun dealer. But they are not just another gang of desperados. They are known to have ties with the neo-Nazi Aryan Nations in northern Idaho. And after the February 15th shootout in Ohio, police found in their vehicle what have now become telltale tools of the far-right guerrilla war. Bullet-resistant vests, two FBI logo baseball caps, note that, two U.S. Marshall badges, note that, handcuffs, a portable scanner radio, a gas grenade, pepper spray, a portable stretcher and body bag, latex gloves, duct tape, camouflage clothing, and three gas masks. Again, note, two U.S. Marshall badges and two FBI logo baseball caps. Obviously, those intended to be utilized for the purposes of simulating governmental affiliations. And again, we should note that for the purposes of the present discussion. Also note that in the previous segment, I noted that a witness named Lawton testified in the grand jury probe into Oklahoma City that four people representing themselves as operatives of the General Services Administration gained access to the building that morning. I wonder again whether they were really GSA operatives or whether perhaps they were simulating GSA affiliations. More about the Keoghs. The Keogh saga begins in western Arkansas with the disappearance in January of 1996 of William Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, 53, a gun dealer, his wife Nancy, 28, and her daughter, Sarah Elizabeth Powell, age 8. They were last seen on their way to a gun show in the town of Springdale. Several weeks after the Muellers disappeared, a witness reported seeing them in a car along with several other men, fueling speculation that they had been abducted. In February, one of Mueller's guns turned up at a pawn shop in Seattle, and it was traced to Kirby Keogh and his son Chevy, who had sold it at a Washington gun show. The investigation dragged, and then on June 29th, the badly decomposed bodies of the Mueller family surfaced in the Illinois Bayou just north of Russellville, Arkansas. Their heads were covered with plastic bags and wrapped with duct tape, and the adults' hands had been cuffed. And again, note that the Mercury News article completely sanitized the ideological affiliations of the Keogh brothers. Reading again from this particular Village Voice article from 3/25/97, authored by James Ridgway, of the Oklahoma City bombing and its milieu, he writes, additionally his, that Timothy McVeigh's, his defense team claims he joined an Arkansas branch of the Ku Klux Klan, and his phone records reveal several different calls to a representative of the National Alliance in Arizona. William Pierce, who heads the National Alliance, is the author of the Turner Diaries. That, of course, the book that was allegedly the blueprint for the Oklahoma City bombing. It also was the blueprint for the depredations of a group called the Order in the 1980s, about which we will have more to say in a second. The following article comes from Searchlight magazine of July of 1997. Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, of a dramatically different ideological orientation. Similar names, totally different ideological orientations. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication. In their section, Searchlight on the World, they have a discussion in their 797 issue about the Oklahoma City bombing. And an interesting individual was called by Timothy McVeigh's defense team to testify in the trial. After attorney Stephen Jones promised the jury that his defense of Timothy McVeigh would produce the real killer, his client was found guilty of conspiracy and murdering 8 federal agents in the Oklahoma City bombing. During the death penalty phase of the case, Jones abruptly changed course, all but admitting his client's guilt. McVeigh was not a demon, he said, but was motivated by ideology and politics. Jones put Robert Pate from Soldier of Fortune magazine, the former research editor of William Pierce's Nazi National Vanguard magazine, in the witness box for 2 days to describe the FBI's murderous deeds at Waco, Texas. Pate's testimony was intended to justify the militia movement, but only reinforced the prosecutor's theory that the bombing was motivated by anger at the federal government. When McVeigh was sentenced to death, his courtroom demeanor was that of a captured soldier. So please note that Robert Pate, now writing for Soldier of Fortune magazine, was formerly a research editor for William Pierce's National Vanguard magazine. National Vanguard, arguably the most important of the domestic Nazi groups, and one that has made a specific point of trying to infiltrate the military. Skipping down, about the Turner Diaries, authored by National Alliance head William Pierce. Since a copy of the Turner Diaries was found with Timothy McVeigh at the time of his arrest, the novel's author, William Pierce, has been deluged by the media, sales of his material have increased, and several National Alliance chapters have grown. The largest is in Ohio, where the former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke spoke to 200 people on May 18th. So again, note that a member of the National Alliance was actually called by Stephen Jones in the defense team. Some of the, again, one of the reasons that I think this was not a provocation in the classic sense was that the media coverage and indeed the handling of the case itself from a legal standpoint has not been what we would expect. Indeed, the apparent international and fascist connections of the milieu involved in the bombing had been suppressed not only by the media, and again, note the ideological sanitization of the Mercury News' coverage of the Keogh brothers and the alleged connection to Timothy McVeigh. Note also the complete blackout on the Argentinian coverage of apparent connections between the milieu of the AMIA bombing in Oklahoma City. Indeed, the judge in the Timothy McVeigh case kept these international connections out. San Francisco Chronicle, Tuesday, June 3rd of 1997, discussed the curious behavior of the judge in that case. This is an article by Joe Thomas of the New York Times. It's Dateline Denver, headlined, Judge Kept Tight Rein on Defense. Subtitled, Prosecutors Used Those Closest to McVeigh to Get to Him. In pretrial motion, Stephen Jones, the lead lawyer for McVeigh, asserted that the bombing was the product of a shadowy conspiracy of terrorists sponsored by a foreign power, operating out of the Philippines, and helped by right-wing groups in the United States. Jones contended that an informer had warned the government that the bombing was imminent, and he demanded access to confidential documents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and national intelligence agencies. Although he did receive some of those documents, his theory about a wider conspiracy never made its way into the courtroom. A lawyer familiar with the case said Mache, that's Judge Richard Mache, M-A-T-S-C-H, denied defense requests to take testimony from several witnesses to support this theory, ruling that none could be tied directly to the crime. Judge Mache has an interesting history. Indeed, Judge Mache was the judge who oversaw the trial of members of the Order. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, May 13th of 1997, this is a Washington Post story, Dateline Denver, headlined, Judge Rules Bombing Trial with Firm Grip on Gavel. Skipping down, he is perhaps best known for presiding over the trial a decade ago of four white supremacists charged with murdering a popular radio talk show host, Alan Berg. The murder of Alan Berg and other crimes by the Nazi group The Order in the 1980s was also inspired by the Turner Diaries. We're going to turn now to a book called Unholy Alliance, subtitled A History of Nazi Involvement with the Occult. That's authored by Peter Levenda, L-E-V-E-N-D-A. And of The Order and the murder of Alan Berg, we read, The murder of Denver talk show host Alan Berg on June 18, 1984, by The Order is one example of the lengths to which these groups will go. The Order is perhaps one of the most secretive and yet most violent of these groups. Patterning itself on an identically named organization of the famous racist novel The Turner Diaries, The Order was also responsible for the largest armored car robbery in U.S. history. And skipping down of The Order, we read, According to one informant who told the story to former Order member Thomas Martinez, The Order was receiving contributions from German, quote, families, unquote, living in South America. This German Nazi, South American Nazi, North American Nazi link is reinforced by stories that German neo-Nazi terrorist Manfred Roeder, capital R-O-E-D-E-R, for instance, met with Dr. Mengele in Brazil as late as 1978 before coming to the States and meeting with American neo-Nazi groups. Roeder was eventually convicted of the 1980 firebombing of a Vietnamese shelter in Hamburg, Germany, which killed two of the boat people. So note again, not only the alleged German families, unquote, in Latin America who financed the Order, note also Manfred Roeder. It was discussed in a recent half-hour segment. He was hired to lecture to the elite German Officers Academy in 1995 and also received support from the German government. I would also note in the book Blood Oath, the allegation is made that the murder of Alan Berg, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and the framing of O.J. were all connected. However, that will have to wait for another time. This is all we have time for today. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.